Welcome to Sunday Times Politics Weekly. We have some big political news for you this week, and today we're going to start off discussing the epic face-off between President Cyril Ramaphosa and Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane in the North Gauteng High Court, with the Judge President Dunstan Mlambo delivering a stunning blow to the Public Protector. But before we jump in, we would like to remind you to engage with us and join the conversation. Chat to us on Twitter using the hashtag ST Politics Weekly, or subscribe to our podcast for free on your favorite podcast app.
This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come in?
My name is Kwanita Hunter, and I'm joined in studio by my colleagues Apiwe de Klerk and Steph Dele. Thank you very much for joining us, guys.
Hi, Kaneto.
Hello, Steph.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. So, how much did you thank your lucky stars that you were not Busisiwe Mkhwebane this week?
What a week she is having, sure. In the words of Jacob Zuma, what a pity we have seen this.
These were real meandos.
It's really doing the most over and above all of the things that we're dealing with as a country. But Twitter has given us the best in content, not just from your average Joes like you and me, but some very high profile people. I saw an interesting exchange between the Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, and the Women's League President, Basabile Dlamini. And in case you missed it, Tito said, in a democracy like ours, the Public Protector should fall on her sword, game over. Enter the Women's League President saying, I wonder what this means. Should a woman fall on her sword? Strong language. How many more women must fall on their sword? And who gets excited when women fall on their sword? And for how long are women going to fall on their swords? Who was the coach of this club if this is a game?
Sure.
Jeez.
So we've got a lot happening in this country, to be honest.
I was not ready for that, actually.
I can't actually keep up. But
But let's take it a few steps back, right?
Take it back.
So you would know that this case, previously we've discussed it in detail on this podcast and on the pages of the Sunday Times politics page. But this case was quite interesting for a number of reasons, right? So it was already theatrical when we saw that Cyril Ramaphosa had Advocate Thembeka Ngwathobi, Advocate Wim Trengove, very senior advocates, to argue his case, while the Public Protector had Muzi Sikhakhani, who we know his kind of opinions and views on certain things based on the cases that he had been representing in the near past, right? So that was already the specter that we went into to it, right? The Public Protector issued a report last year where she found that the President violated the Executive Ethics Act. He misled Parliament. He did not declare personal benefit donations made to the CR17 campaign. And she also found that there was a prima facie suspicion of money laundering in the CR17 funds, right? And there was a whole lot of controversy about what evidence she used and those emails that just came to her doorstep, as she put it. And then it eventually played out in court. And the President upfront said that he was going to challenge this matter in court. And I was on record, I don't know if you remember, up here saying that there was one fundamental thing about this report, a tiny, rudimentary, crazy thing, that a previous report of the said Public Protector was overturned on. And that was on the fact that she didn't give her final report to the President to comment on. Right. Mm-hmm. If you remember the report which we discussed here about, she found that he should be fired because of his role in issuing water license or something when he was still in land affairs. It was a land story. And she had made the finding and he had challenged it in court. Right. And there were two things that she lost that case on. The first, she didn't give him right of reply to the final report. And the second was she relied on evidence from her own CEO, who is now left, right? And she never declared that guy used to previously work for Nkwinti, right? Yes, yes. So we had that kind of knowledge and the court overturned it. So when we saw in the President's arguments quite early on, that he's making that argument, I already saw that the courts are not going to tolerate that, because it's almost, and Mlambo said it in his judgment this week, that on Tuesday, rules of natural justice that if you're found guilty, you must be able to make submissions on that, right? So it's the same in the court of law. You found guilty, you make first you make, you know, you plead your case, you found guilty, you plead your case in mitigation of sentence. And so she didn't do that in this particular case. But obviously the president went in with strong arguments. And in their arguments, they said things like she did not understand the law, she misquoted the law, she invented some bits of the executive ethics code, she didn't give him a proper hearing. Then they got to the real issues, which is the issues of the evidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you listen to that court judgment, that for me was the most interesting bits, was not them finding that her or ruling that her findings were unlawful or irrational, because public protector findings are overturned often. It's not a strange thing. It's not a strange thing at all. Yeah. And it can vary from high profile cases to a small case involving a tiny municipality. But when the court goes further and starts talking about being irrational, starts talking about the fact that she didn't understand the law, that actually she quoted Preka when she's talking about money laundering, so she invoked the law of Preka. Then the judge says, but actually that law had nothing to do with money laundering. Actually, the law that has to do with money laundering is POCA, which is the Protection of Organized Crime Act, POCA, right? Mm-hmm. And judge is almost shocked that she wouldn't know the basic law, right? And then going further to then say that she lacked the competence to deal with certain issues, to realize that this was not public funds, and her office, her competence of her office is about public funds. It may be private individuals, but it's protecting
public funds.
She couldn't make that distinction. Apu, when you listen to that judgment, what is the most shocking thing for you?
Let alone what the most shocking thing would be. Let's look at it, what it would mean for her going forward. This is not the first time the courts have been this harsh on her conduct, on her understanding of the law, or on her application of the law. And it's,
are you making reference to this Reserve Bank, for example?
Yes. Okay. So, and it's mostly not on matters that would deal with a municipality. It's always when it relates to high-profile, very highly political matters that are at play within the ANC, where she gets these things wrong, which is quite shocking. So for her future, this should really worry her. And the quotes that Steyr was quoting from Tito Mboweni should show us that, in fact, those in the ANC who believe that she's fumbling would be ready now to stand up at caucus at the ANC to say, look, let's let her go.
The fact that this was not the first scathing judgment against her, she also has a whole constitutional court. I mean, Justice Nkabinde went for her last year. Does that matter to you? Or do you think that we really need to appreciate this judgment because of the high profile nature, the fact that judges found that she pursued the president even when the evidence pointed otherwise?
I do think that from that first judgment in the Constitutional Court, she was already on borrowed time, as it were. And you've obviously got now the EFF making themselves a player in this matter again. They were previously in the Reserve Bank one, and now they've vowed to take this matter up on appeal in the highest court in the land. And should a similar response come from those judges yet again? You mentioned how scathing Justice Ngabinde was in the last round. Obviously, completely different matter, and they do deal with each situation as it comes before them. They're not going to say, we were, you know, harsh on you before, we'll do so again. But another judgment from the highest court in the land where you cannot appeal it. And I say this because she seemed to imply after the first judgment that she
from
could
the
appeal
court.
The ruling from the Constitutional Court. It would be very, very bad for her. And I mean, you've got the process that's in Parliament that's going to unfold, and that will really give them a lot of ammunition to work with should Parliament decide to go ahead with the investigation.
But before we get to the parliamentary process, and I think there's a lot to talk about there, just going back to some of the trends that we're finding in the different judgments. Obviously, Danson Mlambo has issued previous judgments against her, and then the Concord as well. Also, those ad hoc judgments about Minister Pravin Gordhan went to court. There's been a litany of court judgments against her, right? And the argument that the public protector says is, why am I not held to the same standard like a judge? So judges' rulings are overturned all the time. So if my report is overturned, then it's like the same thing as a judge whose ruling has been overturned, right?
So when you look at how her reports are overturned, I mean, it's a silly argument to make, but let's say you were to make it. Most judgments, when they are not overturned on the basis that this person didn't understand the law.
It's or were malicious.
Or they willfully ignored. They are overturned on the basis that maybe you didn't give that much regard to this fact.
Or interpretation.
Interpretation of this section was wrong, and therefore we feel... You see, those things. It's not the fact that the judge, in whatever case, would have completely misunderstood the law or the application, and would have disregarded previous judgments that have dealt with the same matter. You see what I'm saying? Or then you would say the judge would have based their judgment on information that was not ventilated in court. If you get what I mean, because now the contestation on how she came to her conclusions about the president, that contestation about how were you privy to this information and so on, you see, it's such things that for her, she doesn't have a leg to stand on if she wants to compare herself to judges. That's how I feel.
Because I don't think a judge had invented a paragraph of the executive ethics code and then relied on that invented paragraph.
Also, but I get that, well, she's a qualified advocate, but who are the other legal advisors in that office who work with her? How do they...
But you I mean, we've seen...
Let her fumble like this.
But we've seen in previous litigation when the former COO took her to court. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember
that. And she alleged in that court papers that that it was strangers that actually did this report. It wasn't people internally within the public protector's office, right? So Steyn, coming to you, there still remains the political issue, which is the CR17 donations of almost R500 million.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. This court judgment has given a reprieve to the president because obviously the public protector fumbled and got the wrong end of the legal stick. But there's a political question that still has to be answered in terms of ethics, in terms of factionalism. You know, there's different strings to it. What do you make of the fact that at the end of the day, whether the court made this finding or not, there is still these issues of money and politics?
I don't think he's out of the woods yet. I think given the comments that we made mention of just now from the Women's League president, she's not the only one. You had ANC NEC member Tony Yengeni also weighing in. He put up two pictures, one of Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane and one of Justice Mlambo.
Oh, but you can't take Tony Yengeni seriously. How many times has he put pictures of me up and pictures of you up?
So, no, I've never featured on Tony
Yengeni. Oh, I've featured so many of my pictures.
No, I've not made it yet in life. I've not made it. But, and you would want to dismiss him, but the fact is that he is a member of the National Executive Committee, the highest decision-making body in between conferences, and that is where the fight will remain even long after the courts have been the final arbiter, as it were. You're speaking of the political implications, or what we'll still see in terms of the political environment, and that is that the ANC will continue to be divided on the future of Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane. And this is going to happen. They don't have to make that decision right now, given how long I think the parliamentary processes will be. But there will come a time when they're going to have to vote on this matter. There's people that believe that there has been a predetermined outcome on her future. People that believe, like Batabile Dlamini, that there's an agenda, there's someone out to get her.
For the president.
I don't think it will be just him that is cast in the spotlight, because the matter of money in politics is an ongoing one, and it's one that goes across party lines. If you look at the case of Musi Maimane, for example, in the DA, Lindiwe Sisulu recently addressed I think it was a brunch meeting in Cape Town somewhere, where she obviously she's got her own aspirations happening.
I
in
want
the
to laugh. When,
no, 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 no. But it is.
I'm
a matter,
laughing, and it's a must.
It is something that's an ongoing conversation that is yet to be settled, and until a party can come up with a system which says this is how we manage our internal campaigns, this is how the use of money must happen or not happen in the campaigns, it's going to be an ongoing issue that can be politicized at length indefinitely.
But this gives some respite to Ramaphosa in that debate, because now the court has kind of vindicated him and said, we can't actually police what happens in your party. You sort your own party out. That's effectively what the court said, right? To say whatever happens in an internal party election has nothing to do with anyone else, right? So it kind of puts Ramaphosa back to where he began, to say, but we were all losing money, so.
Yes, to people who are outside the ANC, it sort of relieves pressure from him. It would have been a big blow had the court agreed with the fact that the money used for CR17 benefited him directly, therefore he had to declare it, because they would have used it as a weapon.
Yeah.
But within the ANC, no one has previously stood up and said, I ran a campaign, I raised money, this is the money.
Mm.
So when they are having that debate in the ANC, they're going to say, if they want to have it, if they have that appetite to have it post NGC or even at NGC, they will say, but if you are the only one who has agreed that you set up a fundraising, it was a campaign that was funded by these people, and this is how much it is. So that debate would continue, and they will continue using it against him in the lead up to him attempting to get a second term.
Hmm.
And it's going to be tough for him,
yeah,
because he never denied it. So, I mean,
I agree with Apu. I think in terms of the case, we're looking at the processes of the public protector. We're not looking at the merits of the use of money in internal political contestation. That debate, for me, like Apu says, it's...
So it's not over by this judgment?
I wouldn't say so.
Nah,
I don't think the judgment has anything. It makes no judgment on that issue, which is one that remains for the party.
Apu made the point as well that maybe in the public domain, it kind of settled the matter. That Ramaphosa wasn't as bad as we, as the media, made him out to be at the time.
People must also just let us go. I mean, half a billion, what was it? How much money was it?
500 million.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
What are you doing with that much money?
Yeah.
It could well be that the NDZ campaign had
2 billion.
A billion. Hmm. But this is the money that we know of, as our POS says.
I agree.
What do you do with 500 million rand in an internal... I mean, that is the budget of some political parties to contest elections.
So what we're saying to our listeners, that this judgment, despite whatever happens in appeals or whether it's successful or not, there are two conversations that are super important, or two political issues that this judgment swings in either way. The first is about money and politics, and that 500 million, that's that issue. And then now the issue of the fate of the public protector. So those are the two sort of subtopics that this judgment then gives birth to.
Yes. So from what I'm understanding, Stair, tell me if I'm wrong. The guys from the caucus in parliament have been ready for this. It's been delayed, my thinking, within the ANC circles, because some people would not want to appear as if they want to protect the president from a public protector, like it was the case when it was Zuma versus Thuli Madonsela. Now that's out of the table. Okay, there are some issues relating to Minister of Public Enterprises and others. But insofar as it has to do with the campaigning of the president, which is a very big issue, it's off the table. So you can then fairly now get on with it. So the tricky thing is going to be, do you support a motion by the DA to remove a public protector? One. Two, does the ANC unite to remove Busisiwe Mkhwebane? If it does, how what are the implications to it? And when they do it, are they going to vote down the motion by the DA and bring their own motion? Who's going to do, going to lead that process? Is Tito giving us an indication of what's to come? But is Bathabile Dlamini also giving us those indications? And you must also remember, it's not just the ANC which is going to vote for this. There's also other opposition parties. If the ANC is split, that pro-Mkhwebane faction, would it have enough numbers to vote with the EFF? Because they've been vocal in public saying that the public protector is not going anywhere. And the anti-Mkhwebane faction within the ANC, will they have enough numbers and go with the DA and vote her out? That remains to be seen. And I think for me, that's going to be the most interesting development going forward. With Parliament and whether or not CR is in charge of the ANC or not.
The Speaker, Thandi Modise, has to obviously be very impartial almost in this process. She has to not be seen to be fighting Bosiziwe Mkhwebane in almost like a street fight. Do you think that we're going to see this process unfold in Parliament in a way that's going to take us two steps forward?
I think Thandi Modise has already shown that she has a dog in the fight. There was a very ugly engagement between the two of them where Advocate Mkhwebane was basically saying that she doesn't feel that the Speaker has protected her from in the main opposition parties and the attacks that they have thrown her way in the National Assembly. And whether or not, you know, Thandi Modise played a part or not is another conversation. But the first thing is that there has been an interaction between the two of them that's not been friendly. On the matter of Parliament, I think that the accountability mechanism works. So it's not going to be up to her alone. There is a procedure which she must follow, which she has in terms of granting a motion with substance, which is what she's done by saying to the DA, yes, we hear you out. From there, my understanding is that political parties will then nominate three people to serve on a panel. So I think there'll be like 20 or 30 something names in total from all of the parties. From their panel of three will be picked. That panel will then go and make an investigation to say, is there any merit to this complaint that has been laid by the party? From there, the committee, the Justice Committee, I think it will be, unless there's going to be an ad hoc on, will then go through the process of what we saw, like the in terms of the Eskom inquiry.
Yes.
So it's a long road ahead of us. And only once the Justice Committee has made their recommendation to Parliament, which then members must accept or not accept, will the ANC be at a point where they'll have to, I think, show their colours and make that final vote on whether or not she must go or not, if it comes to that. It likely will.
And now she's gone to court to basically stop that process from even unfolding. Mm. So that delays it anyways.
So we're going to be here a while. The ANC can buy themselves time. But I think, like Apua says, the battle lines have been drawn for some time. People have known their positions. Mm. It's just a matter of if people will stick to the party line, whatever that will be at the time, and where we end up.
But the sad thing, whichever way this thing goes, is that the public confidence in the public protector's office has diminished.
Yeah, I think we are back in the days of the pre-Thulima Tonsela time where people just didn't have confidence in that office.
I don't even think people knew that office existed and what a mandate was.
It felt as if it was there to sort of whitewash these scandals of the ANC. You remember the oil gate scandal, which became a big issue on how that office handled it. It seemed as if it was just protecting the ruling party at the time. So I think we are back in those days now, and it's sad because so much work had been done during Thulima Tonsela's tenure, and so much trust had been won. Even people who are normal Joes in your township, in your rural area, in your far-flung farming area, they knew of the office then. They knew that if I'm not getting cooperation from the law enforcement agencies, at least I will go to that office if they can investigate, it will raise enough awareness that authorities would be forced to act.
Or they'll just mediate. They'll just bring parties together
to solve your issue.
Yeah.
Now, when you break that trust over some petty political squabbling.
Not really petty if you're taking on a whole president.
It's political squabbling anyway. It was obviously it's a big fight for the president, but a president only has 5 years and they leave. We don't always have to have an ANC president. The ANC doesn't always have to be around to be in power.
But that
public protector's office has to be there, and it always has to be there to assist us, the normal citizen who need its services. So it's a pity when you see petty politics that 15 years from now wouldn't matter, eroding such an important institution.
Well, that's all we have time for today, guys. It was a riveting discussion. Thank you very much for joining me today. Please remember to subscribe to our podcast for free at iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasted. By subscribing, you will automatically be notified each time a new podcast is released. If you like this podcast, or you disagreed with Apiwe de Klerk, or you really enjoyed Stair's contribution,
you most likely did.
Please engage with us. Chat to us on Twitter using the hashtag #StPoliticsWeekly or rate us on your favorite podcast app. Thank you. Until next week.
Public service announcement. Keep it clean. Wash your hands.